All right, we're back taking control of your money. My name is Steve Elzinga, and we're going to talk about in this session about the basic mistakes that people make with money. And you know, we're going to look at several of the basic mistakes that most people make, and you know, we all don't make all of them, but all of us struggle in some area. So don't be embarrassed by this. The way to fix things is to take a hard look, an honest look at your own life. So if you're doing this on your own, you know, try to be honest with yourself. It'd be better to be doing it with, let's say, your spouse. Maybe you're taking this mini class and your spouse isn't. I would bring, I think the number one reason people, at least the stated number one reason people end up in divorce often is about money, because money stands for a lot of different things. So if you're married, sitting down and doing this class with your spouse would be a good idea, or doing it with your family. Or maybe you're doing it in a small group. All these are very good. So what are some of the common mistakes that we make with money? Common mistakes we make with money. Number one, spending more than you make. This is probably the number one mistake that people make. It's difficult to do. How do you spend more money than you make? If you don't have money, how do you spend it? Well, in our modern world, we have this thing called credit. You can buy things and not pay for the whole thing, but owe money, and then you have to pay interest on that money. And so a lot of people spend more money than they make. Philippians 3, for as I have often told you before and now tell you again, even with tears, many live as enemies of the cross of Christ. Their destiny is destruction. Their God is their stomach. Okay, what was he talking about? Your appetites, your wants, your desires. You know, when you're really, really hungry, you're almost willing to do anything. Remember Esau, Jacob and Esau, brothers, and Esau sells his birthright to Jacob. Why? Just because he was hungry. Our physical desires often get us into trouble. Their God is their stomach. Their glory is their shame. Their mind is set on earthly things. But our citizenship is in heaven. And we eagerly await a Savior from there, the Lord Jesus. In other words, life is more than just our appetites. And if we just let our appetites go unchecked, we end up in trouble, spending more than we make. Well, what do these verses suggest as the reason we spend more money than we make? You know, and then in your own life, when have you done this? When have you spent more money than you make? Number two, buying everything on payment, monthly payments. Okay, this is a new thing that sellers came up with. So you're buying a big thing like a car and you don't have all the money to buy a car. Well, then you can buy the car over a five-year period. And people will divide the whole cost into monthly payments for 5 years. And then they'll add, of course, interest. No one is going to, give you this kind of deal without trying to make some money. That's the goal. So the goal behind the monthly payment system is, first of all, to get you to buy something that you don't have the money for right now. And secondly, to make interest off you. So in the end, you know, if a car costs $10,000, well, over a five-year period, you're going to spend $12,000 or $13,000 because of the extra interest money that you will have to pay. Now, you don't have to do that. You know, when I bought my first car, I saved all my money until I could actually pay for the car. It wasn't an expensive car. It was a Volkswagen Bug. cost me $1,200, but I saved all $1,200 before I bought the car. I had to do without before that. And then once I bought the car, I started making payments to myself for my next car. So 6, 7, 8 years later, I had enough money to buy the next car. Now, you know, someone who buys a car on payments is making payments and he's paying the interest. I was making payments to myself, and therefore, instead of paying interest, I was making the interest. So buying everything in monthly payment, by the way, it sounds smaller too, right? You buy a car for $10,000, but it's only $350 a month. Oh, well, $350 doesn't sound so bad. $10,000 sounds really bad. Well, you end up paying $13,000. It's just a way of fooling yourself. And so that's what people do. They make everything monthly payments. Can you afford $10 a month for this thing that I want to sell you? Or $50? And then people go, yeah, maybe I can. So people get farther and farther into debt. This is what happens. Why do you think salespeople like to sell things on monthly payments? What does this verse suggest we do instead? Luke 14:28. Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the cost to see if you have enough money to complete it? See, monthly payments get you to buy something without really thinking it through. You don't really understand that you're going to have this debt every single month for the next 5 years. Or in the case of buying a house, for the next 30 years. Number three. Paying interest on things that do not appreciate. In other words, do not go up in value. So when you buy a car for $10,000, but you only pay $1,000 and you owe $9,000 and they break it down into these monthly payments, you actually end up paying interest. Someone is actually paying for the car for you, and then you're paying them slowly back. Well, they're not going to do that just for free. They're doing that so that they can make money. They make money, but you're losing money. In other words, you're paying interest on something that does not go up in value. This car is going to go down in value. You buy it at $10,000, but 3 years later, it's only worth $7,000 or $6,000. It's going down in value. Now, a house, on the other hand, at least historically, you buy it at one price, but it's going up in value. Yes, you're paying interest. You're paying more than what the number was when you first bought it, because you have to pay interest. But the value of your home is actually going up as well. And that's true of a lot of different investments. See, that's what investing is. So I'm suggesting that you pay interest only on things that go up in value, not things that go down in value. Matthew 25. Then the man who received one bag of gold came to his master and said, I knew that you were a hard man, investing where you have not sown and gathering where you've not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your gold in the ground. See, here it is, what belongs to you. His master replied, you wicked, lazy servant. You knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. Well, then you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. Okay? So you want money to make money for you and the things that you buy to actually appreciate in value, go up in value. So, question, what are you paying interest on right now that probably will not go up in value, will not make money? Credit cards, for example, car payments, house payments, or whatever other thing that you've bought where you're having to pay interest. Number four, ways that we waste money. Number four, we're addicted to shopping or reward spending. I work so hard, I deserve what I buy. Okay, so a lot of us fall into this trap. You know, and goods and services in some ways, especially goods, have never been cheaper in the history of the world because of manufacturing and the global economy. I mean, we can buy things. They're incredibly cheap, relatively speaking. And there's so many different options and goods and services. It's unbelievable how cheap everything is. And so we're becoming consumers. And, you know, we sort of have this hunting background, you know, in our history, that when you're looking for something and then you find it, there's a sense of euphoria, a sense of happiness, and we can get trapped into that when we buy things. You know, when you buy something and it's new and you bring it home and you have this new pair of shoes and you walk into a room and you feel like everyone's looking and admiring your new shoes. It makes you feel good about who you are. That's what buying things. You search for something and it's a good deal and you bought it. You end up feeling good about yourself, but it doesn't last that long. So the next day, you're a little discouraged and depressed. And so you go shopping. And then you find something and you buy it and you feel good for an hour or two. It can be an addictive form of self-medicating to make yourself feel good about yourself. Proverbs 30, verse 15. The leech has two daughters. Give, give, they cry. It's never enough. If getting stuff and acquiring stuff is what you do to feel good about yourself, you'll be trapped into always having to do this, and soon you need more and more stuff. If you struggle in this area, what unmet need do you think motivates you to these addictive behaviors? Okay, why don't we feel good about who we are and what we're doing and our purpose on this planet without having to buy stuff? Number five, you need debt in order to motivate you to work hard. This is true for a lot of people. If they don't owe money, then they don't work hard. But because they bought a car, now they got to go to work every day. Because they bought a house, now they got to go to work for the next 30 years. In other words, the motivation to get up in the morning and go to work is because the bank, you owe the bank or somebody money. And you're trying to pay off this thing. It's not to acquire the thing. See, that to me is a more positive thing. You know, if you want something and now you're working really hard and you're saving your money and finally when you saved enough money, you can buy that thing. See, there's a reward for all your hard work. But here, you get the thing that you want and now all you have is this negative debt that's pushing you. So that's why you may feel worn out. You may feel tired. Or you may feel like, well, what's the purpose of my life? Because all you're doing is working really hard to pay off debt on stuff you've gotten that you bought long ago that has lost its shine. It no longer satisfies you. But you still have to pay it off. So in some ways, you're working only for a negative reason instead of a positive reason. Romans 13:8. Let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another. Whoever loves others has fulfilled the law. How much debt do you have? So here's a question for your group or your family, or your husband and wife, if you're doing this together. How much debt do you have? How does your debt control your life? And how does your debt suck the life out of you? Aren't you tired of that debt? So take some time and really evaluate this. Living paycheck to paycheck, okay? So maybe you get paid every 2 weeks. And when you get paid, you use that money to pay for things that you have to pay for, your mortgage or your rent or your gas or your food or whatever it is that you buy. And for some people, what they do is they end up spending the whole paycheck on all the things that they need, and before the 2 weeks is up, they have no money. Now they can't afford food. In other words, they're always slightly behind, or they at least never get ahead. They're making just exactly how much money they need for every 2 week period. And then if an emergency happens, they have no money. They're in trouble. And even when they get a bonus, let's say they get a bonus, they don't put that money away for a rainy day for when they might need it. Then it's like, hey, we got this bonus. We got this free money. Let's go spend it. In other words, people get used to living on the edge, living paycheck to paycheck. Proverbs 6:6-8. Go to the ant, you sluggard, consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler, yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest. There's a sense of self-control. I have more money than I'm spending, but I'm saving it for other purposes and other reasons. That takes discipline. If this describes you, how do you think you got into this habit of living paycheck to paycheck, and why do you think you're stuck there? And what would it take to get out of that? Number 7, you do not appreciate the real cost of the things that you buy. Okay, often when we buy things on credit, when we put something down and then we make monthly payments, we don't really have a true understanding of how much things cost. I'm sure we don't have a clue as to how much, you know, transportation costs. You know, we go somewhere, we own a car, let's say, and we think sometimes that the only cost is the gas. No, it's not the, it's the buying the thing, it's the insurance, it's depreciation. The government says it costs 55 cents to run a car for a mile, to pay for everything. So if you go 10 miles to get a burger, it actually costs you $5. $5 there and $5 back to buy a $3 burger. It costs you $10 to just drive there and back. Or your $5. Yeah, 50 cents times 10 is 5. Yeah, 50 cents times, yeah, it'd be $10. So it's outrageous. Do you appreciate the real cost of things? My father was really good at helping us as kids understand that. He would go over that. The real cost, that your transportation, your time, you know, the thing, you buy it for $50, but, you know, 3 years from now, it's worth nothing. So every year it's going down $17 in value. You're losing $17 every year on it. Your car is like that. You spend a lot of money, but it goes down in value. It doesn't go up in value. What's the real cost of the things that you buy? You do not appreciate the real cost of the things you buy. How many hours you have to work to buy the thing? How much time and money will go into maintaining the thing? All the extra cost that eventually goes into the thing. Luke 14:28. Suppose you want to build a tower. Won't you first down estimate the cost? Okay, we don't often do that. What's the real cost of things? Is this a struggle for you? Okay. Who do you have? Okay, number 8, codependent relationships built on money. Okay, codependent relationships built on money. Now, a man who was lame from birth was being carried to the temple gate called Beautiful, where he was put every day to beg from those into the temple courts. When he saw Peter and John about to enter, he asked them for money, and Peter looked straight at him, as did John. Then Peter said, "Look at us." So the man gave them his attention, expecting to get something from them. Then Peter said, "Silver and gold do I not have, but what I do have I will give to you. In the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, walk." So it's easy to get into a codependent relationship. There are people who need money, and there are people that have money. So the people that need money find ways to make the people with money feel guilty about having the money and them not having the money. Often, this relationship happens with children. Parents make them codependent. Okay, you know, and why would you do that as a parent? Well, it's nice to feel needed. And so you give money to them, and you know, sometimes parents don't make children work for it because they want the kids to feel, you know, like, oh, my parents are so awesome. They gave me this. And but then they have certain expectations. I'm going to give you this, but then what I want from you in return is appreciation. or I want your help. A lot of times, parents will give children things, but it will have strings that are attached. And so you get this weird codependent relationship where I'm doing this to make you dependent on you, on me, but I'm becoming dependent on you. We're dependent on one another, and money is the thing that we're using to do this. Who do you have a codependent money relationship with? Maybe it's a friend, maybe it's a parent, children, a dependent, you know, a lot of, you know, maybe you have a friend who can't hold on to a job and they always need money and you're always supplying the money. And it makes you feel good because you're the one, you know, making this happen. And that person knows how to pull the strings and get you to give them the money. And it's like, you know, in some ways you're both getting something. I'm getting this sense of I feel good because I'm helping you. And you're getting what you want without doing the work. But are we having a positive relationship here? See, codependent relationships, you know, in some ways we're using each other to get something that we want. It's not really about relationship anymore. Number nine, husband and wife not on the same page. Again, I said that this money and fights over money is one of the top reasons why couples, at least the reason they give couples, end in divorce. Because money and what you do with it indicates what you're living for, what your purpose is, what is it that you really want to do in life. And a lot of times, husband and wife are not on the same page. One wants to save money, one wants to spend the money. Or one, you know, wants to use money towards some purpose, lofty goal, and someone else, you know, just, you know, spends it to feel good about themselves. For whatever reason, they're not on the same page. Genesis 2:24, a man leaves his father and mother and is united to his wife, and they become one flesh, one in purpose. So, you know, one of the most important things you can do with your spouse is to get on the same page with money. So that's why if you're married, I hope you're doing this class. It's just a mini class. It's only a few hours. Sit down with each other and go over these things so that you can get on the same page. How does the money subject go with you and your spouse? Is money a thing that you avoid, or is the topic of money a constant battle, a constant fight in your marriage? Do you have separate bank accounts? If you do, what does this say about your marriage? I know a lot of couples will do that. They'll have separate bank accounts, and they put, you know, sometimes the husband makes money, he puts it in his bank account. The wife makes money, she puts it in her bank account. Then they constantly fight over who's paying for what. When we buy food for the family, whose bank account are we going to use? When we buy the car, when we buy the house, and it becomes this nightmare of yours and mine and yours. Husband and wife were supposed to be one. My wife and I have one joint account. It's not my money. It's not her money. It's the money that God has entrusted to our partnership. So as partners, we sit down and we say, well, what are we going to do with the money that God has allowed us to have? What purpose do we give ourselves? And can we agree on these things together? All right, practical things for you to do before the next meeting. Number one, if you're single, you have already answered these questions and you can simply ponder what you've written. If you're married, sit down together and compare notes and discuss similarities and differences. Do this in a respectful manner, as we all struggle with one thing or another. We are just trying to identify the problems that we have with money at this point in the study. Eventually, we will get to possible ways to solve these problems. So just enjoy finding the problems that you have with money. That's the first step towards fixing them. Number three. If you're married with children, maybe sit down as a family and discuss this lesson. You might be surprised with how insightful your children are. All right. So this little session was about trying to figure out how we make mistakes with money. So try to be open and honest with yourself and with others so that we, as we move into more solution kinds of talk, you'll be empowered and money will become a servant to God's purpose in your life rather than the authority in your life or the influence in your life. You know, the devil, I think, you know, finds his ways to grab control of you through things like money. All right, so until next time.